Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Campionato di calcio italiano.
Hello, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, and welcome to the Forza Italian Football Podcast. As ever, I am your host, Connor Clancy. I'm joined by the usual two, Vito Doria. Vito, hello.
Hello, Connor. How are you?
I'm not right. Too bad, thanks. I'm not too bad. I don't know if I asked you, actually, which makes me feel bad. How are you?
I'm all right. I've got my morning coffee, so hopefully that sauced me from feeling like a zombie.
And I've got my nighttime decaf tea, so hopefully in about 2 hours I will feel like a zombie and be able to sleep. I've got a very, very early train to catch tomorrow morning by my standards. We're also joined by Kev Pugzielski, again in a Roma shirt. Kev, hello.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I've got a tea myself, but it looks a bit ropey, like the wife's rushed upstairs making it for me, so...
Well, to be fair, you did boot her out of the room because we called you while you were watching the end of a film, so I can't blame her if she's not serving you up the nicest cup of tea at the moment.
She knows what Sunday night means.
Pod comes first. Pod comes first. Kev, how are you?
I'm not too bad. Not too bad.
Look, no, we won't. We'll wait. We'll wait. But, I mean, I was trying to think of a way to start this week's podcast, but I know there was a big game... arguably two big games in that Juve beat Roma, Inter beat Fiorentina. There was the shock result in Genoa, obviously, which we'll come on to. But, Kev, it feels like this was a weekend where nothing actually happened. Or is that just me that thinks that?
No, it did feel a little bit like that. I don't think it's helped by one of the bigger encounters taking place on a Friday night. Because, you know, we've all talked about the fatigue of how many games we're having to get through at the moment. And you kind of feel a little bit, you know, overloaded with games by the time Sunday evening comes. So you kind of forget that Inter did go top. And as much as probably Vito hates to hear it, the most significant probably leap was Genoa continuing their good form. And, you know, they're nearly over the halfway point in the league standings.
Yeah, and we're over the halfway point in the league season just, which is unthinkable for Genoa. Usually they wait another... 10-15 games before they start clicking into gear just in time to survive. But look, we'll start at the top as ever. Milan are still there after being temporarily leapfrogged by Cross City rivals Inter. They played Crotone on Sunday afternoon. They thumped them 4-0. But I think 4 is probably a bit of gloss on the scoreline for this one, Kev, because Ibrahimovic put them 1-0 up with his 500th club career goal. We'll get on to him. And then he got his 501st. But it was a 10-minute window in the second half where Milan scored 3 times and that was it done then for Crotone.
Yeah, I said before coming on onto the pod that I kind of started losing interest, but after the goals had gone in. And actually, I watched the game and put a note down on 25 minutes, just all Milan, because I kind of thought, I was probably writing that note in case Crotone snuck a 1-0 win, but, you know, just to remind me how dominant they were for the first 25 minutes. And then suddenly, boom, boom, boom. And then that control's there. And again, because they never looked out of sight, I kind of lost a little bit of interest. I was probably more impressed with that dominant performance on the back of Inter going top, because I kind of want to see what's made of them when they are chasing, you know, maybe chasing somebody else at the top of the table for a full week. But I still think, given Inter's relatively convincing win on Friday night, that this, you know, the dominance in this performance, even against bottom of the league, you know, goes another step towards believing me that Milan could take the title.
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of been on that for a while now, right? I mean, it feels like months ago that we were saying that they're actually contenders, probably about October time, maybe. But I mean, they really, really are. They really, really are. They're still there, Vito. But I want to talk about Rafael Leão in particular, because he's a player who comes in for his fair share of criticism, and at times, rightly so. I mean, his decision-making isn't always tip-top. But when he delivers, he is one of, in my opinion anyway, one of the most enjoyable players to watch in Serie A. And that was kind of seen from his pass for Ibrahimovic's first goal this afternoon.
Well, he's the type of player that does have those technical abilities. He can pull off a few fancy tricks as well. And he's quite a tall player, so you could see why in other games he would be put as a centre forward, but he is better off as a wingman. And when in full flight, he's pretty hard to stop, because he's got the physical attributes, he's got the speed, and with the technique he's got, if he can utilize all his strengths properly, he'd be a far more dangerous player. So far, we've seen moments of brilliance, and he's got into the FIF Team of the Week a couple of times. So it shows that when he is in top form, he can be a great threat for the Rossoneri and even a match winner.
Kev, I was actually a little bit disappointed that Milan had a goal ruled out a little bit earlier on, because Davide Calabria had scored after Leão had done a beautiful little bit of improvised footwork to tee him up. And I thought, oh, that's a shame, because Leão's been robbed of a really nice assist there, because Ibra was lazy and offside in the build-up. But then he redeemed himself with a pass that, I mean, it's the kind of pass that you used to see Andres Iniesta, Xavi, and that Barcelona team play through a gap between the centre-back and the full-back that didn't look like it existed, but they found it. And it was just great. He's 21 as well. 21.
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, we've talked before about the person receiving the pass and the move they make. I suppose knowing that it's Ibrahimovic going on to it gives him that confidence to play it first time, because you've got to remember it was 0-0 still. You know, they had struggled for 30 minutes to break Crotone down. And yeah, the Calabria goal that you referenced was a lovely move that took me ages, because I kind of doing other things around the game to work out what it had been pulled back for. It was so early in the move.
The commentary team were a bit confused by that as well, to be honest, because they kept talking about how Calabria is clearly not offside because he's run from behind Leão, and it was only after watching it back a few times that they clocked onto what had happened. But yeah, Milan marching on at the top. Vito, as Kev said, it was a big and perfect response to Inter overtaking them, and showed arguably a slightly different side to them.
Well, they are still maintaining their run, showing that even though the City rivals are putting some pressure on the top, that they're able to maintain their own hopes or aspirations for the title. And also against a team like Crotone, with all due respect to them, these are the kind of teams that Milan should be winning comprehensively against at home. So to put four away is surely going to impress the fans and, of course, those involved at the club.
Kev, Zlatan Ibrahimovic turns 40 this year. He's old enough literally to be Rafael Leao's dad and a number of the players in that Milan team's father as well, and probably to have fathered multiple of those players given the timeline of their births. But he scored 500 club career goals, and he's a freak.
Yeah, so I'm just soaking all that in. You know, it brings a tear to my eye.
Why? How old are you this year?
I turn 40 in May. Maybe when Milan and Ibrahimovic are celebrating a Scudetto. I had a lot of time for Ibrahimovic. Maybe as I get a bit older and he gets a bit older, I wince a little at some of the sort of stuff on social media, but if you take purely what he's done in a football sense, he is one of the phenomenal players of his generation. I think, you know, the whole goal thing, we've had the Ronaldo statistics and then going back to Santos changing Pelé's numbers. I think if you just look at his talent alone, what he's won, what he's given the sides he's played for, he's probably unfortunate that he's played in a time where Ronaldo and Messi have been so far beyond everybody else. Otherwise, we'd probably be talking about at least a hat-trick of Ballon d'Ors for him.
Yeah, I do think he is one of those. In the same bracket as kind of Iniesta, Iron Robin as well, to an extent, that they're very unfortunate that they coincided with two extraterrestrials, right? Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, they're not human. They are something different, and I do think you're right in that.
Yeah, and the numbers, obviously, we're talking about the 500 or 501 goals is something I said before, where you get that strange combination of a supremely talented player that has the physical attributes. I'm not just talking about, you know, size, you know, shape, whatever, that he manages to come back from injuries quickly, keep himself fit, and still compete at this level. It's not just that we're moving into a generation now where we're probably going to see footballers playing into later stages of their careers. But
On to someone else who, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, is probably old enough to have fathered. Vito, this one's over to you. Nicolò Barella scored the first in Inter's 2-0 win away at Fiorentina. Just again proving himself to be, I kind of want to ramp it up, because every time I talk about him, I say how good he is and he's the best X in Serie A. But is he the best player in Serie A now, if not only the best Italian player?
In terms of form, I think he could make an excellent case for it. He's definitely up there. I'm actually stumped as to who I would pick at number one, because Barella's probably been Inter's best player. Then you've got AC Milan, where although Ibra's been out for some time, I'd still say he's been the best player. For natural talent, of course, Zlatan's number one, but even for form, it would either be between him or Frank Kessié. Then at Juve, you know, as much as we don't want the fanboys to sort of rejoice till the cows come home, you'd still say Ronaldo, because he's still scoring prolifically. But Barella, to me, has shown that he's the most complete midfielder in Serie A at the moment, and probably the most complete midfielder Italy has for the time being, because he can contribute in both phases in the game, and he's someone that's not just a hard worker. He's got the football brain, and he's got the technical skills as well. So he's very well-rounded, and probably the only extra attribute he could really add to his game is if he added more goals. And he scored a stupendous goal against Fiorentina on Friday night. So that's probably the only extra thing. But I don't think it's mandatory for him to do so. But if he adds it, it'd be something fantastic.
Kev, who is better than Barella?
Well, I'm not sure. The point I was just about to make was that I saw Barella post-game comment where he said, I'm Inter's Marchisio. And I thought to myself, you're better than Marchisio.
You know, yeah, you're
being polite to someone, or you're doing yourself down, because you are a more rounded, if you like, midfielder, footballer, what you want to call it. He gets around the pitch quicker, you know, can dispossess people better. You know, don't get me wrong, Marquisio had his talents. Just to answer your question, I've been really impressed with Mkhitaryan this season. When we're just kind of talking midfield-ish kind of attack that sort of breaks through the, you know, between the lines of midfield and attack and supports the attacking side and a large part of the improvement for Roma this year. But yeah, Barella's got to be up there. I was thinking about it the other day, just thinking who I'd pick now as maybe a team of the season, because invariably when we are asked to do this in however many weeks we've got left, you forget the people that have performed in the first half of the season that probably warrant that place, which I might try and do this week. But those two would definitely be in there.
I think what stands in Barella's favour, though, is that he's put in one of the biggest performances came in the Derby d'Italia, right? So it's a memorable one. It will stick in your head that little bit more. But yeah, there you go. Vito, with everything that's going on at Inter at the moment, particularly behind the scenes, the club's ownership is very much up in the air. Nobody really knows what's going to happen there. But all things considered, you kind of have to give credit to Antonio Conte for keeping them ticking on the pitch, despite everything that's uncertain.
Yeah, I think in this case, we do have to give him some credit, because before the speculation suggesting that the Suning Group or the Zhang family are having issues getting money out of China, so they are not able to invest more into Inter. Yeah, it's not ideal for anyone involved in the club to have some uncertainty in regards to the wages and financial situation. So for Conte to keep them focused on winning Serie A at least, I think that's a credit to him. And also, I think it also demonstrates his strengths. I think we're easy to pounce on certain flaws in his character or coaching. I'm probably one of those people, especially if he just complains too much and he's too obsessed with experienced players and so forth. But when he does focus on the league, he sticks to his 3-5-2 and he has his preferred set of players. He knows how to get the best out of them. So, I mean, I think he shows that, yeah, he deserves praise for knowing how to create a winning machine for league competitions.
Did you see the video in midweek, Kev? Was it in midweek? I can't remember when it was, but the video of Conte in the stands when his assistant or friend is talking through a microphone to someone on the bench.
Oh, no, I can't have... Oh, no, because I only saw the first half of the Coppa Italia actually on Tuesday, wasn't it?
Well, anyway, our listeners will no doubt have seen this. And if you've not, find it. It's gift and it's everywhere. Basically, is... there's a guy sitting beside Conte who's speaking through a microphone, I would say allegedly to the people on the bench, because technically he's not supposed to do that. But Conte is just sitting there trying to communicate with him for him to then communicate a message through the microphone. And something must have happened on the pitch, because then Conte, in the most Conte fashion, just like jumped up flailing and leaned over, grabbed the microphone and just started screaming into it himself. Reminded me of the time he jumped up on the dugout when Italy scored in the European Championship, the time when he just booted the ball when it came near him as well. It was a peak Conte moment, we should say. The biggest game of the weekend, though, Vito Doria, was Juve-Roma. And Roma did what they tend to do against the big teams this year, and they didn't quite deliver. They lost 2-0. Cristiano Ronaldo scored the first. And Roger Ibanez, he's had a bad time against the big sides too. He put through his own goal for the second.
Yeah, another solid win for Juventus. And look, more than anything, I watched the first half, but even from what I picked up on that, I thought that Roma were able to keep possession and create chances. But I thought Juventus, when they did have the ball, they were probably more slick, and the chances they generated were probably a lot better than what the Giallorossi created. It's games like this where, unfortunately, we see that Roma do not do well against the big teams. I thought that Mkhitaryan and, to another extent, Spinazzola looked like they try to create some spark. They try to create something for Roma, but the others weren't able to really pose a serious threat for the Bianconeri defence. As for Juventus, even though there were probably a few players that weren't at their best individually, that they're still a strong enough team that they'll have that individual brilliance that will get them over the line.
Yeah, but they did. I think saying that they got over the line probably just about sums it up, because Kev, Juve had 3 shots.
Wow, I didn't realise it was that low. They made a big thing in the British commentary about Roma having between sort of 55% and 60% possession. Scott Munro on Twitter sort of summed up Roma's performance really quite well, because it wasn't as if they did anything wrong, but they lacked that sort of clinical edge in the final third. If they'd walked away with a narrow 1-0 win, we'd probably been talking about the performance and certainly praising it a lot more than we are now. I then struggled looking at how Juventus probably approached the game as much as anything else, because they gave up that possession, as to whether they got the goal so early. Well, I say so early, relatively early, with 13 minutes, I think it was, certainly within the first 15, that it allowed them to have that more cautious approach, which we have kind of seen under Pirlo this season. Start of the campaign, there were lots of sort of passing amongst themselves in their own firm third, if you like, their defensive third. So I wondered whether they never actually had to get out of second gear, because Roma were so poor in that final third. They got that early goal, and we probably didn't see the game we might have seen if it had been, say, 0-0 at half time, and maybe Fonseca had taken the reins or just got something out of Roma attacking wise in the second half, and Juventus had to put a little bit more pressure on.
A situation where Fonseca did kind of take the reins this week is that Edin Dzeko stripped of the Roma captaincy, having fallen out with the coach. You're shaking your head, Kev. What's your opinion on all of this?
To be honest, I didn't realise that had happened until I watched the game and they were talking about it. But I would have taken the captaincy off of him. Was it a year, 2 years ago when he had that ridiculous rant that got himself sent off in the Coppa Italia? You know, he would not leave the pitch, and it took him ages to get him off, and they collapsed to someone. It might have been at Atalanta, so you'd know, Connor. And I couldn't believe that he retained the captaincy or was given it after that. But yeah,
I remember an incident of him talking himself into a stupid red card, but I don't remember it being against Atalanta, unfortunately.
I just remember it being in the cup because it was midweek.
Atalanta got binned out of the cup quite early last season against Fiorentina, so it wouldn't have been.
Maybe it was a year before. But I remember still being annoyed that he was ever given the captaincy after that. Mm. But you think, as captain, he's gone in and he's, you know, you've got to kind of support your coach. I suppose you are the person that the rest of the team would expect to be the spokesperson if they've got an issue with the coach's approach, formation, strategy. But you would probably prefer, certainly the coach, but maybe even some of the other players, that's done the day after when the dust had settled. And obviously what has happened is in the immediate aftermath to the exit to Spezia. But yeah, I suppose if he's going to bring him back into the team, then the taking the captaincy away is the probably most logical thing to do, just to show that, you know, he is going to have the last word.
Speaking of aging forwards in Serie A, Goran Pandev, Vito, he scored twice as Genoa picked up arguably, well, I don't even want to say arguably there, as Genoa picked up undoubtedly the biggest result of this round of Serie A. They beat Napoli 2-1 at the Marassi, and I mean, you've got to give it to them. What a result that was.
It's an incredible result, especially when you consider that early in the season, they were destroyed by the Partenope 6-0. Obviously, the circumstances were different as they had Rolando Maran as coach, and unfortunately, they had a huge bunch of COVID-19 infections, so that did not help their situation. But once again, whenever they have Davide Ballardini as a coach, there's something about him and that club. When they work together, he's able to make the whole greater than the sum of their parts. So the players play for him. They're a really well-drilled side, and I think with the way Napoli played, I think Napoli played too slow for my liking, especially when you consider they got so many pacey players. I think he played into Genoa's hands, and with the evergreen Goran Pandev, he took his chances very well. And for Genoa, they're clearly moving away from the relegation zone.
How long is it going to last, though, Vito? And I don't mean Genoa's uprise. I mean everything being rosy with Ballardini.
Look, I think there's only one man who can really provide that answer. And even that, you won't be convinced if his answer is the best one. And that's Enrico Preziosi, the president. He's just so volatile. And, you know, one minute he might be happy with Ballardini, and then, like he said in his previous stint, he calls Ballardini a terrible coach. But I think if we're being brutally honest, Ballardini's been Genoa's best coach since they've been back in Serie A, aside from Gasperini. Two different styles of football, but, you know, they have some affection with the club, or the atmosphere around the club suits them, and they somehow get the best out of the Grifone. So, really, I think if Preziosi is really genuine about results, you know, regardless of what happens with Ballardini, just is better off just sticking with him, because anyone else is going to be worse, which would be great from some perspective. But you know, if he really cares about his own supporters, he should just stick with Ballardini through thick and thin, because.
There was a quick pause, and I decided I have to jump in here, or else he's gonna get the Vito Storia Sam side in, and you just beat me to it. You just beat me to it. So hats off. Kev, there's a lot going on in Napoli with regards to Gennaro Gattuso's future. I mean, it seems like he's not gonna be there, despite the club saying that he will be there next season. And I mean, results like this don't help things.
No, you know, as much as I probably would have expected them to beat Genoa this weekend, and then I could have continued my belief that he's probably being treated a little bit harshly with the speculation around his exit. Because I know what, in an ideal world, Napoli want from him. They want him to do exactly as Pioli has done at Milan, and take a side and mould it into this cohesive unit that's going to challenge for the title. But really, they've won a Coppa Italia. Obviously, this year's Supercoppa doesn't help because of the ridiculously poor performance from them. But they're still within touching distance of Champions League. And it's hard, because even... you've not got fans in the stadium at the moment, which either helps or hinders you, depending on their feelings towards the coach. But it is hard when you consider that for 19 other clubs, the Scudetto is not going to happen this year. So what do you want? You know, you want to go see some entertaining football. You do get that on occasion with Napoli. So you can go to the game, you can enjoy your day out, you can go and watch football, you can go home relatively happy, probably 2 out of 3 games a season you've won, and you know, and you'll hopefully qualify for Europe, which gives you a few extra sort of incentives to win another cup competition. And I would be happy as a Napoli fan, to be frank. So it kind of baffles me a little as to why they won't give him more time, because he hasn't been there even 2 full seasons.
No, I agree. And I think it is a really... I know we keep saying it, but it is an unusual season. And looking at the Serie A table, if it finished as it currently stands, I think there could only be 2 teams annoyed with how the season went. And that would be Cagliari and Parma, because they're underperforming. Everyone else is kind of doing more or less what you'd expect, given the circumstances. Particularly at the top, right? Because you've got a lot of teams bunched in together. There's not all that much separating any of them, really. And Napoli are well amongst it. I mean, they're currently 6th, you know? It's not the end of the world. And they've got a game in hand, too. So, yeah, it's a strange one.
Well, yeah, we also praise places like the San Paolo. Oh, sorry, it's not the San Paolo anymore. No.
The Maradona.
The Maradona. Yeah, that's easier than rolling out that whole name.
I struggled last week.
And, you know, I've had this argument with a few people, you know, about different leagues, about different underperforming sides and different championships across Europe. And I think you can't say everybody's in the same situation because nobody's playing behind fans. If you're also, or have been willing for the last 5, 10, 15 years to say, oh, that gives them an edge. You know, the Maradona gives them an edge when it's full crowd and they're facing, you know, a top side or whatever. You know, even the atmosphere in Sardinia for Cagliari, you know, with them in the bottom three. And then again, we've talked about it the other way around, where the Milan fans get on the back of their side and they're not there anymore. So you can't say there is no advantage to it. So I think that also needs to be taken into account when Napoli are maybe dropping unexpected points at home.
Mm. One of the craziest games of the weekend came in Bergamo on Saturday because Atalanta did what they always do against teams they should beat, and they cruised to a 3-0 advantage after 21 minutes. And that should have been that. But this is Atalanta, so that very much was not that. Torino came back from 3 goals behind Vito and left Bergamo with a point. And it has to be said, a remarkable point for Torino.
Absolutely. Atalanta had that spell in the first half where they got 3 goals in 7 minutes. But as good as Atalanta's attacking play was, I thought Salvatore Sirigu had one of his worst games in a Torino jumper. Just his positioning and his awareness on the goals, I thought, was very out of character for him. And it probably made the goals look easier than what they should have been. So I think under different circumstances, if Giampaolo was still the coach, that comeback would not have been on. Since Davide Nicola has replaced him, he's galvanized the team. So although they were down by 3 goals so early in the game, they just persisted with the way of playing. They eventually cut it down to 3-2 just before half time, and then with only minutes to go, Bonazzoli came on as a sub and got that goal. So, yeah, it's just I think probably maybe not so much the tactics would be praised, but, I think just the mental strength more than anything of Torino to, you know, react that way, and also against a team that's known for playing some of the best football in Italy and also in Europe. You know, I think, it's an incredible change of attitude in a short space of time.
Kev, when Atalanta went 3-0 up, so I should say before this game, I didn't have a good feeling because Atalanta aren't good against bad teams. And then I saw that Freuler wasn't starting and Pessina was starting in the deeper of the midfield positions. And then the icing on the cake was when I saw that Ruslan Malinovsky was in the 11, because that only leads one way. And they went 3-0 up, and I said to my friend, all right, it's one of those days. It's all right. And then as soon as Belotti scored, I just looked. And I said, oh, no, it's happening. And then they scored again. And then they almost scored again in the space of 5 first half minutes before the break. So when the goal did eventually come in the 84th minute or whenever it was, I was not a slight bit surprised. Is that just the pessimism of supporting a team, or is it because it's Atalanta and that's what they're capable of?
I think it's possibly the pessimism of supporting that team. Because actually I switched over, called it just about 10, 15 minutes in. So Atalanta scored almost as soon as I sort of switched over. With a bit of luck, because Ilicic, he hit it into the floor, which kind of did for Sirigu getting it, because you know, he was expecting him to fully drill it low. And then by the time they'd sort of scored their other 2 goals, I was thinking about the 7-0 that they turned Torino over a while ago. And then even half an hour in, where Belotti seemed to plead Romero's innocence, and then it looks as though the referee didn't even change his mind and give him a drop ball, but he decided to kick it back to Collini. And I thought, well, if that's the sort of fight Torino have got, then, you know, that's kind of it. And that's why I largely sort of switched off to the game going on in the background as I cooked a lovely vegetarian lasagna.
We're not going to give Belotti credit for that. I mean, he went to ground anticipating contact. There wasn't contact. The referee booked Romero and Belotti said, no, look, it wasn't one. So then there was a drop ball, but I think that it was supposed to be a drop ball where it's just played from. But Belotti just knocked it back out of sportsmanship. And I put out a tweet. He's from Bergamo, Kev. Is he trying to get a move?
I'd forgotten that, actually. Well, it's about time he had a move, to be honest, if you know, in my eyes. Yeah, I'd certainly praise him for the sportsmanship, but I just thought it showed a subconscious level that as captain, everybody might have fed off that and thought, okay, yeah, we know our day's done today, even 30 minutes in, but it wasn't to be the case.
I found myself utterly deflated when the third goal went in, despite not being surprised. But I kind of caught myself then, because isn't that the whole thing about Atalanta, right? They do crazy things, and that's why they're fun to watch, because you never know what you're going to get from them. Even if they're 3-0 up or 3-0 down, you don't know what's going to happen. And that's in all a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, look, we were saying about this whole scenario with fans not in the stadium. If you're still being able to have those feelings watching it through a TV screen, which I certainly struggle with, not being there in person, then that is all you can ask for as a fan, because at the moment it's extremely difficult. But even when they're back in a stadium, if you're not expecting, you know, although I know you have a couple of times got your hopes up, if you're not expecting a challenge for the title, then all you want is entertaining football. Good entertaining football, not yeah, you're getting six goals. You're conceding six goals every week, so you're seeing plenty of goals. But yeah,
Kev, I would like to see any goals at the moment, given what I've had to endure this season. But we'll get on to that. Don't you worry, Vito. Lazio play Cagliari in the last game of the weekend. They won 1-0 thanks to you know who, Ciro Immobile, and they're now fifth, I believe. Cagliari in the bottom three, a result that's big for both teams. But we'll start with Lazio. A good one. A good win.
Oh, indeed, it's an important win, because usually with Lazio, they're the kind of team that's capable of scoring a few goals, but this time they just needed the one, and Immobile showed that he's decisive once again for the Biancocelesti. He's very he's consistent, he's prolific, and the goal was a bit of a scrappy goal, but when you are a striker, you just got to take them as they come, and yeah, considering what he's done in the last 4 years or so with them, again, he just does what he does best, and I'm sure Lazio fans are grateful that he's been around for as long as he has.
We're really spoiled, Vito, aren't we, in Serie A for strikers? I mean, you've got Quagliarella with your mob. I've got Lucio Muriel, Duvan Zapata. There's Zlatan, there's Ciro Immobile, there's Dzeko when he's on it as well. We've got the two boys at Inter. We've got loads of really top strikers. And Belotti, who's playing for a terrible team. It's great.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great look for the league to have all these different strikers. And when they're in form, even better.
Absolutely. What is it about Serie A and strikers? And people say it's a defensive league. Kev, why are you laughing?
Well, it's because Juve have got Cristiano Ronaldo at the moment, so they don't buy strikers, they buy like wingers, because they don't want to upset Cristiano. they did bring in Morata, but they're just not pinching all of the homegrown strikers at the moment until Ronaldo retires.
Yeah. I didn't even mention Morata, actually. He's definitely in that list. Yeah, once Cristiano goes, Duvan's gone there, isn't he? And we'll get Belotti and everything will be okay. Everything will be okay if Belotti comes back to Bergamo, we'll see. Kev, what do you make of this one? Cagliari in the bottom three now. I know our very own Ben Hughes, who you're friendly with, let's be honest. You're both Liverpool fans, unfortunately. And he's concerned about Cagliari, despite not being a fan. He's in the situation with Cagliari as I am with Parma. They're not my Serie A team, but I have a lot of feelings for them because I live where they play. And Ben's worried.
Yeah, I was about to say, you call him not a fan, but if you read some of his tweets, there's clearly quite strong feelings there for them.
He has the same allegiance as Mr. Doria, though.
Oh, I didn't realise that. Maybe he needs to tweet more about it, but obviously he really doesn't want to lose Serie A football from Sardinia.
He's stuck. If I lose Serie A football, I can just get on a train. He'd have to get the boat. It's not great.
But they've been looking really poor in recent weeks. I think the first time I noticed it, they lost at home to Benevento. Tonight, there was a period towards the end of the game, probably from sort of 65 minutes onwards, where you two don't have this experience, but I felt I was back in the late 80s where there was a back pass rule and the defenders would pass it back to the goalkeeper. He'd pick it up and bounce the ball to the other end of the box and pass it. The only difference tonight was that they'd pass it back to Pepe Reina and he'd either distribute it to Lucas in the middle of midfield or out to the other centre-half. They were extremely well sort of split. And it felt like there was no pressure from the Cagliari end whatsoever, and almost as if they'd given up on the game, even though they're only one goal behind. And I wondered, I feared that was their season in a microcosm, that they're struggling so much that they're giving up on things a little bit.
Do you think?
It was just a really subpar end to a game that's only got one goal in it. You know, it wasn't like they were 3-0 down with sort of 20 minutes to go. And again, when they're not performing at home, whether or not that's without the fans there, they're finding it a little bit difficult. You just think, go all out, you know, try and get something out of that game, show a little bit of fight. And it wasn't there for me tonight.
Elsewhere at the bottom, Cagliari are 18th in 19th place. Parma, it's getting ridiculous, guys. Like, it's getting really ridiculous. They haven't scored a goal at home for 8 matches. Their last goal at home came in October. It's February now. Their last win at home came 9-10 matches ago at the beginning of October. They do nothing. Absolutely nothing. I said at the top of this pod, maybe it was before we started recording, that they've got one player who plays football and it's Kutska. Nobody else does anything. I don't understand what any of the new players are supposed to do because they don't do anything. Bruno is struggling this year as well. And it's just a mess. It's an absolute mess.
Are they still paying Liverani?
Well, they would be, wouldn't they? Yeah. So he'll come back for a few games.
Well, no, maybe they should get both of them in. Try two coaches. If one's not working, try two coaches.
But I was a bit concerned today because Daversa, for the first time since, I think it might have been when they played Samp. No, it was when they played Bologna at the end of last season at the Tardini. Actually, that's quite weird because today was against Bologna too. Didn't put two and two together until right this moment. But he lined up with a 3-5-2. He veered away from his usual 4-3-3. And the first half on that day was an absolute disaster, and they went 2-0 down by halftime. Then he went back to 4-3-3, and they came back in the second half and drew 2-2. Roberto Inglese scored with literally the last kick of the game. I think they scored 2 stoppage time goals that day, actually. Kurtic with the other, maybe. But today, he did that 3-5-2 thing again, and for 5 minutes, Parma looked like a football team. I'm not going to say they looked good, but they looked like a football team. They were aggressive. They were on the front foot. When they didn't have the ball, they were making life difficult for Bologna. But then after that, fuck me. It's unbelievable. They just, when I say they didn't do anything, I really mean it. Like, for, I'd say, 40 minutes of the first half and 38 minutes of the second half, Parma did nothing. It was unbelievable.
Cornelius kicked someone in the head, didn't he?
I don't know what he does. I don't know why they're paying him. I don't know why they're playing him. I said it last season as well, but because like I said on the pod last week, he scored 6 goals against Genoa, so his statistics looked good. So people on Twitter said he was a good footballer. He's useless. He does nothing for that team. We saw it at Atalanta. He was getting kept out of the team by Andrea Petagna, who couldn't score a goal in Bergamo. And I was in Parma, and the only reason he played last season was because Roberto Inglese was always injured. Now they've got Graziano Pelle in, but I don't know how he's going to score because they don't get the ball to the striker anyway. And when the ball gets into the box, it's just Gervinho running around, and then he runs around the perimeter of the box and then passes to someone that's not there, and it goes out for a throw-in. It's mad. It's actually mad. And to be honest, I'm so sick of watching them. I'm so sick of watching them.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Someone else say something, please.
This because of the quality of the squad overall, you just wonder, do this team really deserve relegation? Probably from that extent, and also the performances, you'd probably say yes. But there's just a part of me that really wants to see the new ownership work somehow. But, you know, on the football pitch, yeah, it's very hard to work out, you know, how Davers could possibly change things, even with the new signs. I mean, if Andrea Conti comes good and starts making those runs from right back and chipping in with a few goals, great. If somehow they can get the ball to Pelé and he starts scoring like he did at Southampton and Feyenoord, fantastic. But you just don't know when it's going to happen or how it clicks. And then you got a few of the other teams who have been relegation rivals, but they're moving away. Teams like Genoa and Udinese. At the moment, it's a bit hard to see who's going to get dragged into that battle. Even Spezia look like they're in a good position to survive too. So, yeah, I think Parma, as well as Cagliari, they look like they're in a scary position where they could be joining Crotone in Serie B next season.
They've won two games.
Yeah, I think they will. And you just hope that because of the new ownership, they use that as kind of a springboard to doing something more, you know, more long-term strategy. It's probably been hard to come in. Like, did they come in during the pandemic? Was the deal
signed off. No. They came at the end of September.
Okay.
So just as the season started.
Maybe without the focus that being in the top flight brings, that they can, you know, because you don't want them to, not they free fall foul last time. It was other issues that dragged them down to Serie D. But yeah, you hope that they can go down and maybe implement some sort of long-term strategy. Because I know you've obviously spoken to them and they seem to be taking a sensible approach, even if we don't know what their long-term strategic aim is for the club. It clearly isn't pumping in lots of money for unnecessary.
No, this is the concern. I'm not sure how accepting the public in Parma would be of this team getting relegated. And when you look at it, the number of signings they've made as well, like in the last window, fair enough, the new ownership weren't in place until the last week of the window, and they hadn't signed anyone before all that. And a lot of new players come in. They've not done a tap. And then in this transfer window again, they were very quiet until very late on, and they brought in a lot of new players. Parma's problem over the last few years in Serie A has been going forward. They've always been defensively quite sound. That first season, they were very good defensively. Last season, they were all right defensively, particularly when it was Bruno and Dermaku playing together. Dermaku got shipped off to Lecce in Serie B. For love nor money, can't understand why that happened. But the new signings, the areas they needed to improve were up top, right? Gervinho should have been sold last winter when he tried to force his move to the UAE. He wasn't. Things fell through. He should have been gotten rid of him in the summer. But despite the problems that they have up front, every time they play a game, it's Gervinho and Cornelius up top. They've got, who was on the bench today? Xerxes was on the bench. Caro Mo was on the bench, who's hit or miss. Mihaila was on the bench. Brunetta was on the bench. Dennis Mann was on the bench. All of these new forward players that they've brought in, they're not getting a look in, which is very, very strange, right? When that is the weakness. Just throw them in. What have you got to lose? Second from bottom. I don't understand anything that's going on at Parma at the moment. But Vito Muzabaro, he scored a brace. First ever Bologna player to score a brace away at Parma in Serie A. And it was on February 7th. His last away brace in Serie A came on February 7th, 2020, when he scored two in a win at Roma. So February 7th is Muzabaro's favourite day of the year.
Yeah, very coincidental indeed. Got to keep an eye on that for the 7th of February next year to see what the thing's going on. Yeah, it's odd because it's Fire's owner. I don't think it's his birthday. Maybe, whose birthday's on the 7th? Who knows?
Who knows indeed. But he was good. He got two goals, and Nicolas Sansone in particular assisted both of them. He played well as well. I like seeing him play, you know.
Yeah, he's actually one of those players that on his day, he's actually a pretty good player. But throughout his career, I think he's another one of those Italian players that's just had consistency issues, because we've seen it, he was at Parma, he was at Sassuolo, then he had that spell at Villarreal in Spain. So on his day, I like Sansone. He's pretty handy. And if we just look at the team in general, though, Orsolini didn't start. They have Skovar Olsen. Up front was Barrow and Sansone on the left. So it was good that at least Mihailović changed things up, because Palacio can only do so much at 39. I think they do lack in that sort of number nine role. And Barrow was an out strike at Atalanta, but for some reason Mihailović has been using him on that left side, in the 4-2-3-1. So to have Barrow up front, I think that's a big plus for both Barrow and Mihailović.
It's interesting that you say that, because I, at times today, got caught just watching him, because I was quite curious, because I remember him as being very much like an out-and-out number nine with Atalanta, But today, the number of times he dropped deep just looking for the ball, and Mihailović kept telling him, Muza, go up. And he was sitting in like a trequartista or regista position at times. It was a bit strange. But yeah, it's good to see Barrow firing. Kev, Spezia beat Sassuolo 2-1. Chicho Caputo put the Nerovardi ahead, but it wasn't enough. Spezia came back, 2-1 win, and it's a big one.
Yeah, well, it's like Vito was saying earlier, it's helping them clear their way away from that relegation spot. The highlights seem to indicate that Sassuolo just weren't clinical enough. I think Caputo raced away about midway through the first half and sort of finished as clinically as he usually does. But they seem to create a lot and just not, not score from anything they managed to develop. And then Spezia just took the chances that fell to him from corners. I think both were corners or free kicks slung into the box. One direct header in, and the other that, who was it? Giassi. Toe poked just as it fell within the 6-yard box. So I think they have got an astonishing away record this year. They certainly did at one stage of the season. They picked up something like 5 or 7 points from 12 away from home at the start of the season, which really gave them a springboard to do well, keep themselves up. And if it continues like that, then they will be comfortable towards the latter end of the season.
Yeah, they've got a stinking home record, like absolutely stinking. But I like them. I've been impressed by what I've seen from them this season. I think Vincenzo Italiano is doing quite a decent job there. Onto the other Ligurian team, Vito. Samp had to come back from one goal behind to Gianluca Caprari actually scored for Benevento, a familiar face. But Keita Baldadiao scored after. Did he come off the bench? No, Quagliarella and Damsgaard came off the bench and kind of changed the game a little bit. Yeah. And then Keita Baldadiao scored. But against Benevento, a point's not a bad result in Campania.
considering the way Benevento have been playing this season, yeah, it's probably not the worst place to get a draw, but I think to be fair, it probably wasn't a game that Samp really deserved to win, to be honest. The only times that they really looked dangerous was probably the last 15, 20 minutes when Damsgaard replaced Candreva, Verre came on, played in the midfield, and then Quagliarella, although he wasn't overly influential, just his presence, I think, made some sort of a difference. Damsgaard in particular, I thought, really changed things up, because until then, the first half was pretty dour. You could maybe you'd give Benevento a bit of the edge, but the first 20, 25 minutes of that second half, Benevento looked like they could have gone 2 or 3 nil ahead. But I think between the decision making and the way they released the ball, I think that probably prevented them from killing the game off. Caprari and La Padula looked like a threat up front. They were using more that right side, so they were, I mean, Sump's right and their left, so they were really, you know, putting pressure on Candreva and Berezinski. And yeah, I think Ranieri might be happy with the point, but I think Inzaghi would probably feel that was 2 points lost.
Yeah, I think Benevento have definitely been the best of the bunch of the promoted sides, and you do get that kind of mentality off them that even when they pick up a point against a team that, you know, a point's not a bad result against, they would feel like it's a missed opportunity. So, good result, but a bad result for both teams at the same time. Kev, the last game we're going to talk about, Udinese 2, Verona 0. Verona have only won twice in their last six. This one, I mean, it's two goals in the last 7 minutes that won it for Udinese, but huge win for them. And Verona have kind of just regressed to the mean a little bit.
Yeah, I think we said the same last year as well, where we thought, oh, you know, could they be in the mix towards the latter stages of the season for, you know, Europa League places? And they fell away again. I know we're only just over the halfway mark, but they're having defeats more easily than we would generally expect them. Obviously, they lost Kabula. Did I pronounce that correctly? I always do one. They lost him to Roma. You know, and they've maybe not looked, because that spine has gone, because Amrabat went to Fiorentina as well. But again, with the way that Parma, Crotone, Cagliari, even if they slip into the bottom half, you kind of think they're just going to float now around sort of 8th to 12th place, and will probably be relatively happy until you can get fans back into the stadium and keep their top flight status.
I was quite surprised to see that both Kalinic and Lasagna started the game, and Juric afterwards said that, look, I made a mistake playing the two of them together. I'm going to just have to choose one going forward, which you think makes a lot of sense, and it would make sense probably if neither of them started all that often going forward. But there we are. Look, we're finished talking about the games. Guys, we've come to the near end of the pod. Kev, why are you already laughing? Are you just so excited to play the game?
No, you told me you had a story or something to tell us anyway.
Do you want it before the game then?
Well, you know, your messages pre-pod seem to indicate that we were getting it before the game.
All right. Well, I was out for when was it? It was yesterday evening on Saturday. So obviously Emilia Romagna is now giallo. We're at a yellow zone, which means that restaurants and bars have reopened with particular restrictions.
I thought you meant that's why Parma have decided to like change kits all the bloody time.
Actually, we need to talk about that too. But no, so bars and restaurants are reopened. So me and a couple of my friends headed to one of our favorite spots. And we tend to go to this restaurant and they've got good beer there. And then we'll go to the bar, have a pint, and then be on our way. So we did that. And after a fantastic meal, if anyone is ever in Parma, by the way, Birrificio Gregorio, best burger and best beer you'll have in Parma, go there. And we were walking through the park, Parco Ducale. And I froze. And my mate looked at me and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Do you see who that is?"
"It's not man. It's not your man, is it?"
"Do you see who that is?" And he was like, "Who? Your man over there in the black jacket?" And I said, "Yes." Do you not know who that is? And nobody knew who he was. But I think you know who it was.
Could it be Mr. Bruno Alves himself?
It was Big Bruno Alves. Yeah, I saw him in the wild, in his natural habitat.
Has he got so old that he's now aimlessly wandering through parks, forgetting where he lives?
Well, he was with a lady friend, so I would assume his wife, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, let's not speculate on who the lady's friend was. Leisurely stroll.
And if it wasn't the midst of a pandemic, I would have asked him for a photo, and I never do that. Like, I've only ever asked one celebrity for a photo before, and Bruno would have been the second. Undoubtedly.
That wasn't me, no? We had a selfie?
Okay. Just gonna let that sit. Like the bad smell that it was. Yeah, so I saw Bruno Alves, Kev, for the first time out in the wild. I was delighted with myself. Absolutely delighted. He now joins a list of... I've seen Kutska, I've seen Kulusevski, and I've seen Antonino Barilla as well, just out and about in Parma. So, and Roberto Inglese as well. So he's on a very short list there. But Bruno made my weekend. I immediately thought, I'm going to use Bruno in the game this week, but I can't do that now. So we're going to play the game. Vito, obviously you're going first because Kev doesn't know how to win. So I'm going to set the timer. You know how it works. You've got 2 minutes to discover the identity of a mystery Serie A player, and your time starts now.
Is the player a foreigner?
The player is a foreigner, yes.
Does this player play for a club in Northern Italy?
They do not play in Northern Italy, no, sorry.
Do they play in the capital city?
They do not play in the capital city, no.
Do they play for a club in Campania?
They do play in Campania, yes.
Is this player a Benevento player?
The player does not play for Benevento, sorry. It was going to be a Benevento player, but then I thought I had already done him, so I switched to the other Campania club.
Yeah, my geography at the moment. I am now...
They're a big club, Kev, a very big club.
Right.
Diego Maradona used to play for them.
Is it... are they a midfielder?
They are a midfielder. Do you know what club this is?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Oh, it's Kev's turn. Sorry. It's
my guy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Stop stalling.
Are they an international?
They are, yeah.
Okay.
Just.
Oh, God.
As in, like, not recently, as in... They've not played very many games.
Oh, God.
You've got about 32 seconds left.
Is it Fabian Ruiz?
It's not Fabian Ruiz.
Is it Bakayoko?
It's not Timo Bakayoko.
Is it Zielinski?
It's not Piotr Zielinski.
He must have played loads for us, actually.
Yeah. Us?
Yes.
We're always us.
So go quick.
Is it Elmas?
It's not Elif Elmas, Kev. We're into the last 10 seconds. I think
Is it Deme?
What did you say?
Deme.
Stop the clock.
Really?
Hang on, no. Stop the clock because the game's finished. Time's
no,
up.
What?
Nah, it's not. It is. It's Diego Deme. Kev's only got a bloody one. Kev's just got a one a game.
I don't even know how many points I've got.
I'm amazed. Vito does not look happy about it
either. I'm shocked that I lost.
Yeah,
I'm trying to, particularly after I didn't know that Naples is in Campania.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you don't deserve the points because I had to tell you the club without saying their name.
Oh, don't. It's like counties over here. I don't really do counties.
Yeah, but it's weird because in Italy, the regions matter a lot more. Mm. It's strange.
I tell you what, I can't find the last time I wrote down how many points I had. Let's call it 7.
Right. It's less than 5. So we absolutely won't call it 7. And I'd be shocked if it's more than 3. Today's result included.
Yeah.
Let's call it 7. Out of 20, 7.
Anyway, what did you want to talk to me? What did you want to talk to me about kits anyway?
Oh, Parma, right? So today was a joke because Parma's kit is white short, black socks, or white shirt, black shorts. Today they wore white shorts so that Bologna could wear black shorts, despite Bologna just needing to wear white shorts with their home. I don't know why Bologna changed kits, and I thought you'd have something to say on it because you're a favorite.
See, oddly, when we had the discussion last week, I hadn't managed to see the Napoli Parma highlights.
Yeah, I noticed that actually, because that was the kit I was trying to describe to you.
Yeah, Parma had brought out a fourth dark blue strip.
That was the first alternative kit they brought out this season before they released their two away kits.
I was more offended with Samp wearing white, because blue against yellow and red stripes is not a kit clash.
I saw that tweet.
and oddly, I don't know, with the whole changing because of the shorts. I remember there was a World Cup, certainly 2002. There was a sort of a FIFA directive that if your shirts clashed, you changed your shirt, and then if there was still a short clash, you could change your shorts. And I remember Brazil, just because they wanted to play yellow, blue, white, they changed their entire strip to play blue, white. Blue against Costa Rica, because Costa Rica were like red shirts, white shorts, red stuff. But interestingly, if you're me, I saw that there's only one MLS side this year having a third shirt, because Atlanta, not to be mistaken with Atalanta, are the only one that sells over 100,000 shirts. It's the only reason Adidas are making a third strip for them. So nothing to do with kit clashes, just that's how they do it.
Interesting one, that.
I'd feel much better if people just did it based on shirt sales, and then we wouldn't have so many kits floating around.
Be an interesting one, all right. All right. I think that's all I've got to say. Oh, Parma have new lanyards. It was nice. So when you get your accreditation, the old lanyard was just a dark blue with the Parma logo on. Now it's like yellow and blue broken into each other with Parma Calcio written on it. They're quite nice now, actually. I like them.
You want to hope that the person that does the accreditation hasn't heard you about 20 minutes ago saying you're fed up of watching Parma and you don't want to watch them again.
It's a good thing I'm leaving the country, isn't it?
Yes, of course.
I'll be back next season for some sweet Serie B. We'll see what happens then. But guys, let's put the listeners out of their misery, shall we? Vito, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Kev, say goodbye.
Ciao, ragazzi.
I knew you were going to do something. Kev, say goodbye again.
Goodbye, guys.
That is ciao from me. A presto.
Seduti sui gradoni, mentre sfilano ragazze di illusioni, che se poi esiste la felicità, chi ti dice che non passi anche di qua? Tu sei grande Bologna, tu sei forte Bologna, così bella Bologna, bella davvero. Alevo la Bologna, le tue ali Bologna, le mie gambe Bologna, sto correndo con te.
guarda il cielo come blu, corro sul fuoco dell'amore. Dai, vestiti così, sei bella più di un fiore. Staremo in curva, abbracciati a un'idea. E sarà come sentire la marea.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.